This is White Sox Weekly, your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Welcome on into White Sox Weekly. I am Jeff Meller. And can you feel it? I know it's been a frigid week here in the city of Chicago. And so if you're like me, you have to be looking forward to what will be coming your way on the radio. Maybe the ESPN Chicago app if we're going to skew a little more modern these days. But if you're in the Chicagoland area and you need a little bit of escape, boy, have we got it for you today. Because finally, coming your way right after we wrap up White Sox Weekly today, here at 2 o'clock, we have the first spring training baseball game of the Cactus League for the White Sox as they head on over to take on the Chicago Cubs. We have ourselves a little a crosstown classic going down in Arizona. Now, again, it's going to be at Sloan Park, so Cubs will be the home team in this game. But Len and DJ will have your White Sox call coming up later today. Again, at 2 o'clock, as soon as we wrap things up here on White Sox Weekly. And Brendan Riley, who actually snuck into Arizona, our executive producer of White Sox Baseball, snuck down to Arizona for a quick 36-hour foray. Give me a little spring training batting practice sound, Brendan. Oh, there it is. Doesn't that just warm the cockles of your heart hearing that? You know we're this much closer to baseball season. Brendan, did you record this audio live while you were down there? I know you were getting sound for us as the White Sox Network.
This is not the sound I was able to get us.
Okay, that's all right.
Brendan, it felt like spring training down there, though, I'll tell you that.
Well, yeah, you were lucky. But for all the Chicagoans out there who have endured the rough last couple of weeks of cold weather, we have an escape for you again coming up at 2 o'clock today when the White Sox start the Cactus League play, their first spring training game of the year at 2 o'clock against the Cubs. And hopefully that was just a little bit of a taste. But as I mentioned, Brendan was down in Arizona grabbing some sound from the White Sox. We'll share some of that with you as the show progresses. Let's kick things off with the White Sox manager, Will Venable, because he's going to be someone we hear from a lot this year. He's going to set a different tone. That is the plan, at least. And he addressed how he actually addressed the White Sox regarding last season.
No, our focus was on today and what we're going to do starting today to have a great camp and have a great day and build the foundational pieces that we need to have to have a great season. So it's really about being present and doing the things that we can control now to put everything in place to have a positive season.
I like that too. As Brendan pointed out, obviously birds chirping also makes you feel like you're not actually in some brutal temps here in Chicago. And the good news is that it should be warming up here over the next couple of weeks. So hopefully we're past the worst of it. But it's nice to hear birds chirping, bats cracking, and Will Venable telling White Sox players, no, we're not focused on last year. We're moving forward. It's all about today. I think that's the right message. There's no need to harp on what happened last year because, for the most part, there's a lot of different players on this roster. There's certainly some holdovers. And that's the plan here. What I'm going to do, I'm going to run through what will be the projected opening day lineup for your Sox, your opening day rotation, maybe some of the key bullpen members here, just to kind of get you acquainted with the White Sox in 2025, what some of the expectations are going to be. But it's nice to hear Will Venable talk about moving forward. And again, I do like everything I've heard from him so far, so that is encouraging for White Sox fans. All right, so as I mentioned, let's give you a synopsis of what you can expect around the diamond for the White Sox and maybe a possible projected day-to-day lineup as well that you'll potentially see. In right field, you've got the Palatine Punisher, Mike Tauchman. Of course, Chicagoans are probably aware of him from being a local kid. He's now 34. He's been in the majors, a veteran presence who I expect to be atop the lineup. He has a lefty bat who can certainly get on base at a pretty high clip. So Mike Tauchman, nice addition by the White Sox. He's almost likely to be your starting right fielder, and I expect to be your leadoff man as well on opening day. Luis Robert Jr., he will be manning center field. We've been told that time and time again by both Chris Getz and Will Venable. And Will Venable actually talked about Luis Robert at spring training as well.
Yeah, I mean, make no mistake, he is our center fielder, and he's going to spend the majority of the time there. I think trying to get him through this first part of the season and being mindful of workload is going to be something that we have to do. And, you know, what that looks like, we'll talk to him. We'll collaborate as a group to kind of figure out, you know, is that a day off here and there? Is that a DH spot here and there? You know, make no mistake, he's our center fielder.
I think that's been... Again, the Birds, you got to love them. But that's been the refrain from the White Sox upper management, is that they're going to ease Luis Robert. And he even echoed those sentiments as well. They're going to ease him in because, of course, he's dealt with a lot of soft tissue injuries over the years. And I think they, especially as we're talking about cold weather in Chicago, that first month, March into April, don't be surprised if they take it easy on him, give him the occasional day off, or at least let him DH, because they want to make sure that he gets to the warmer weather healthy. Now, in left field, I expect hitting third most days will be Andrew Benintendi. He had a much better second half last year. The hope is that he can continue what he was doing there in the second half as the season begins. Now, hitting cleanup, I think, will probably be, in all likelihood, your first baseman, Andrew Vaughn, most days. Would be nice to see Andrew Vaughn continue to progress at the plate a little bit. Now, I talked last week with Scott Merkin, and we both agreed that Andrew Vaughn, the expectations for him, because he was the third overall pick in a draft, in some ways has maybe created an outsized expectation and hope for him. If he can just continue to get a little bit better each and every year, the White Sox may have, you know, your cornerstone at first base. He just needs to continue to show you a little bit of improvement and get past, you know, the whole idea of he's the third overall pick, you know, and carrying the weight of the world on his shoulders. Hopefully he can do that a little bit more this year. Hitting fifth most likely will be your starting third baseman, Josh Rojas. Rojas, another veteran who the White Sox picked up in the offseason, has had some pretty nice years with the Diamondbacks in the past, spent last year with the Seattle Mariners. He's somebody who can give you a little bit of everything. He's got pop, he's got speed, and defensively, he's a pretty solid glove man at third base, but he's also got the versatility and flexibility to play second base, left field, right field if you need, even shortstop in a pinch. So Josh Rojas, a very versatile player for the White Sox, who I expect to be manning the hot corner most days. At second base and likely hitting sixth will be Lenin Sosa. Will be nice to see him finally get a full season of at-bats. I think he's always dealt with, you know, never having a true opportunity to have the job all to himself. I think he knows going into camp, as long as he goes out and does a pretty solid job hitting the baseball, that he will be your everyday second baseman for the most part. Now, I anticipate most days at DH we'll see Miguel Vargas. He'll probably start out hitting seventh if he gets hot or shows anything more than what he showed last year. He'll be moved up in the order eventually. He'll probably be your primary DH. He can play third base a little bit as well. He can also play the corner outfield positions. So he has some flexibility. And I think when you listen to Will Venable talk, even though you have to designate someone who will be your primary DH, which I think Vargas is, what you can be sure of is that the White Sox are going to utilize DH the way a lot of teams do around baseball these days. You're going to use it to give all your players the occasional quote-unquote half day off, if you will. Get them off their feet a little bit. Just let them go to the dish four or five times during the game. And then, you know, use it as a quasi-rest day. But Miguel Vargas will be the guy who I think sees the most at-bats at DH. Unless, of course, the guy we mentioned last week who the White Sox signed, unless Joey Gallo proves that he can turn back the clock just a little bit. And if he can, then maybe a lot of those at-bats will go to Joey Gallo as well. At shortstop, if all things go according to plan, of course, it will be the White Sox top prospect, Colson Montgomery, who will be your shortstop. I would guess hitting eighth, at least to start the season. Again, this is fluid because, of course, I'm kind of just penciling guys in to where I think they'll hit. That could certainly move to ninth. You could see him hitting seventh. And hell, if things get off to a good start, Colson Montgomery might shoot up into the lineup, you know, he could easily be, you know, hitting second if things go well and he gets off to a great start. Colson Montgomery talked about his expectations now that he is entering his second spring training.
I'm expecting a lot of opportunity and a lot of competition. That's kind of what Chris Getz has been saying, and Skip has also been saying the same thing. So I think it's very, very fortunate for this opportunity. You know, a lot of opportunity, a lot of competition. That's basically all I gotta say.
Sox fans have been hearing about you for a few years. Yeah. Are you anxious to get on the opening day roster, or does it matter to you?
I mean, I feel like everybody's a little anxious, you know, because if you want to be the best, you have to kind of envision yourself at the big league level. So, yeah, of course I want to see myself at the big league level, but also there's a lot of really good players also competing for jobs and things like that. So I'm going to respect whatever decision they have, but, I mean, I'm going to do whatever I can to, you know, help the team win.
I think Golson Montgomery sounds like somebody who is a lot more comfortable this season, getting that first spring training under his belt, and that is perfectly understandable. A 23-year-old, he was 22 last year, you know, entering spring training, it's just, if you talk to anybody who's been around this game, that first spring training, you know, you go in eyes wide open, and it is just an entirely different experience. You're living out your lifelong dream, but at the same time, you're expected to perform. And so I think Colson Montgomery, just having that under his belt, you can expect to see a lot more development from him. And if everything goes according to plan, if he proves he can handle some big league pitching, there's no doubt he will likely be the White Sox starting shortstop. At least that is, I think, the hope for the White Sox front office and all White Sox fans as well. Catching most days, I suspect, will be Corey Lee. Of course, we've already talked quite a bit on White Sox Weekly the past month or so about Edgar Caro and Kyle Teal being the long-term players behind the plate who will likely lead the White Sox into the future. But the future's, I don't suspect, here just yet when it comes to those two players. Corey Lee is somebody who, you know, has had his moments for the White Sox, and I don't think they're going to be rushing him off the roster anytime soon. He'll probably, in all likelihood, be your starting catcher most days until Edgar Caro and Kyle Teal prove that they belong at the major league level. But again, Corey Lee is somebody who's had his moments at times, so it'll be interesting to see how he handles it this year, knowing that he's got a couple of hotshot prospects breathing down his neck looking to take that job for the long term. So there's your primary, I think, starting lineup, at least what you can expect heading into the 2025 season as we stand right now, you know, heading into the first game of spring training today. Again, right here at 2 o'clock, White Sox take on the Cubs on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000. Quick look at the starting rotation. So, of course, the White Sox big offseason addition was Martin Perez. I suspect he'll probably be your starting day opener, but I say that with maybe a 40% certainty because I think Jonathan Cannon did a lot last year. If he doesn't get the opening day start Cannon, then he'll probably slot in as your number two starter. So I think between Perez and Jonathan Cannon, that's your likely 1-2 for the White Sox. Of course, Davis Martin, who White Sox fans are familiar with, he'll be in the rotation at probably your third spot. Sean Burke, who's seen an increase in velocity, is somebody who I know the White Sox are excited about. I know Brian Bannister has talked a lot about his improvement this offseason. And so Sean Burke, probably your fourth starter out of the rotation. And then as we enter spring training, at least the game portion of it, Bryce Wilson, maybe the fifth man. But again, in baseball these days, you're never going to go through a season with just five starters. In fact, I'd say most teams have six or seven starting pitchers at a bare minimum that they're kind of looking at. I suspect that will certainly be the case. We'll have to see what arms emerge in camp here to give the White Sox some potential depth throughout the season. And then finally, I think that Justin Anderson's your likely closer, at least from the outset. He's the veteran presence. The White Sox signed him from the Kansas City Royals. He has a few saves to his name in his Major League Baseball career. He'll probably get the first crack at it. There's certainly the possibility that somebody like Prelander Baroa, if he impresses, could have a say in that role. But again, it's so interchangeable these days at the closer spot that it's not necessarily the way it once was where you had your lockdown guy in the ninth at all times. I think every Major League Baseball team is moving to a point where the entire bullpen kind of needs to be ready. At least three or four guys out there need to be ready to come in at any moment to kind of use in that fireman role where they can put out fires when called upon. So Justin Anderson, Prelander Baroa, Frazier Ellard, your lefty, probably your top lefty in the pen. And then Gus Varland. He's Louis Varland's brother, Louis Varland from the Twins. Gus Varland is somebody who you might want to keep an eye on. He, I think, has a lot of potential in the pen. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly here on your home of the Chicago White Sox, ESPN 1000. Cover your bases with the new ballpark pass. For a limited time, get access to every home game in March, April, and May. That's right, March, April, and May. Your ballpark pass includes tickets to opening day and exclusive giveaways celebrating the unforgettable moments, legendary players, and iconic eras that have shaped the 125-year legacy. To purchase, visit whitesox.com/ballparkpass. All right, when we come back, the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred, addressed a lot of key items. He always does at the start of spring training. So I will share what the commissioner had to say in regards to the state of baseball when we come back right here on ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on your home of the Chicago White Sox, ESPN 1000. Don't forget, first spring training game of the year for the White Sox, Cactus League opener for them as they take on the Chicago Cubs at Sloan Park. Len Casper, Darren Jackson will be on the call coming up right after White Sox Weekly today, coming your way at 2 o'clock Central here on ESPN 1000. Sox fans, single game tickets are on sale now. Be here for opening day on March 27th at 3:10 p.m. And don't miss out on the season's biggest matchups, plus exciting new promotions and theme nights all summer long. For more information and to secure your tickets, visit whitesox.com today. All right, so at the start of spring training, Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball, always addresses the assembled media for what are the bigger picture items surrounding baseball. He takes questions. What are the concerns? I always find it informative at the start of the season because I do think you get a little more casual commissioner in that setting, not necessarily having his guard up. So I always think it's interesting to kind of listen and see what he has to say. And one of the items that Rob Manfred addressed is something that baseball fans have been acclimating to over the last couple of seasons, and that is the rules changes. And Rob Manfred was asked what the feedback has been like from Major League Baseball teams about those rules changes.
The teams have been uniformly more positive about the rule changes than I thought they would be. I think that everybody has come to appreciate that the changes in the game, it's not just about the minutes, it's about the action and the athleticism that fans were looking for, and I think the clubs uniformly have responded favorably. Now, they may have to make changes, you know, in order to be competitive with that change, but they have been uniformly positive about it. I think that the most surprising and pleasantly so, and I think important for the long term, is because of the process that went on in the minor leagues, the results we got at the big league level were really close to what the people in our baseball operations group predicted. And I think that's important for the future because it gives people confidence that you can make a change, predict what's going to happen, and get the outcome that you're looking for. And, like any institution, we're going to need to continue to change going forward.
And when he says they're going to continue to change or at least need to address that, guess what? The ABS challenge system is going to begin being used during spring training games for the first time ever this season. Now, in today's game, White Sox-Cubs, it will not be in play because the White Sox are visiting Sloan Park and the Cubs field does not have the ABS system in place yet. I anticipate that will probably be something that that Major League Baseball does next year. But this season, all shared ballparks in Arizona have the ABS system. And, of course, the White Sox share Camelback with the Los Angeles Dodgers. And so the White Sox home games and some other games in Arizona, but all of their home games will have the ABS system, the challenge system. So keep an eye out for that in spring training. If you're unfamiliar with the ABS challenge rules, each team starts the game with two challenges. Only the batter, the pitcher, and the catcher can challenge an umpire's call. A challenge must be made immediately after the umpire's call without any assistance from the dugout or other players. A scorecard graphic will show the location of the pitch and the result of the challenge. Successful challenges are retained. So you have two, but as long as you get them correct, you don't lose a challenge until the umpire's call is confirmed on that one. So something to keep an eye out in spring training for when the White Sox have home games. Now, maybe a bigger issue when it comes to the health of baseball is how exactly Major League Baseball teams are going to monetize streaming. And, of course, I'm talking about the broadcast of baseball games on television. This has been obviously something that's very critical to the health of baseball because they do not, at least we're seeing a change, a complete revolution in some ways of how people are broadcasting and consuming television products, and baseball is not immune to that. So Rob Manfred addressed how exactly what the plan is for Major League Baseball in monetizing streaming.
From the beginning of this kind of shift in the media environment, I think we've been clear that at least for some interim period, there's going to be a hybrid model out there that we're going to continue to monetize on the linear side while the streaming side develops more fully. It's absolutely clear that streaming alone right now it does not produce the kind of economics that we become accustomed to. But I do think that the combination of the remaining cable activity and streaming can get clubs into a good position, and that over time there will be opportunities in the digital environment to generate not only what we have generated historically, but more.
Now, certainly this is interesting for the White Sox because they have, in conjunction with the Bulls and Blackhawks, launched CHSN, which right now does not have a cable carrier. So, you know, the future of baseball and broadcasting your team and the television rights or what type of revenue you can produce certainly is going to be a huge discussion point moving forward. And as you'll hear from Rob Manfred over the next couple cuts, it is something that seems to be intertwined in everything we're talking about, specifically payroll disparity amongst large and small markets and how it seems to be increasing.
We certainly have owners in the game who are every bit as concerned as fans are about the level of disparity in the game. Look, we sell competition at the end of the day. You would expect them to be concerned. I think that that issue combined with the effect of the changes in the media environment are 1-2. On the radar screen of owners, and you know they're related at least right now because the brunt of the downturn in the regional sports network market has been felt generally in our smaller markets. Unfortunately, it'll probably get to everybody at some point, but the larger markets more resilient and haven't felt the pinch quite as quickly.
And so, as I will note, I think because it's another important fact here, Rob Manfred, that he addressed the media on Tuesday. That was prior, obviously, to Thursday when there was a major announcement between ESPN and Major League Baseball that this will be the last season that ESPN carries Major League Baseball games on their network, at least in regards to the current contract that they have. ESPN has opted out of the couple years that they had left on the deal, which was their right. And so this leads to an interesting proposition of, again, it's not just your local baseball team, the White Sox, and how you're going to consume them, but now moving forward in the age of streaming, how are you going to be watching these national baseball games? It'll be fascinating to see what comes about and what exactly Major League Baseball and Rob Manfred can put together so that, you know, the product is available for all those who want to consume it. Now, obviously, they continue to maintain those revenue streams, which have helped to create what he's talking about there, the competitive balance. More specifically on competitive balance and how he was asked, Rob Manfred, that is, how exactly do you define competitive balance?
It means a lot of different things. I mean, you know, quantitatively, you know, we often talk about not having repeat winners. I think that's important. You know, there are other more sophisticated measures in terms of, you know, the winning percentages and how they're spread. But maybe as important as any of those is the perception of the fan in the market. And, you know, when you take the free agent market as an example of it, right? You sign a free agent, you don't know what you're going to get on the field. He may or may not make you better. But at least during the wintertime, it generates a certain excitement that's good for your market. It gives fans the impression that you're trying, and that's important to the business as well. So there's a lot of different pieces to that phrase, competitive balance, in my view.
So perhaps the elephant in the room here is a team like the Los Angeles Dodgers, who have a television deal that is extremely lucrative, that is guaranteed money. I believe it runs through 2037. And so the Dodgers are going to have this huge competitive advantage until Major League Baseball can figure out a way to properly, I don't want to say distribute, but, you know, figure out a way where teams that maybe weren't as fortunate enough as the Dodgers to cash in at the exact right moment can still compete. And he was asked, how are teams that have cable deals going to be opposed against teams that are not as fortunate, those without, the old teams with cable deals versus those without?
This is a temporal problem, okay? What's happening in cable eventually is going to bite everybody. In the interim, we have taken steps to try to support the clubs that experienced the problems first, stepping in with MLB Media, giving them the ability to have a digital product in market without making all of the investment that would be necessary for them to do that on their own. We were very fortunate last year. The MLBPA gave us some flexibility with respect to the supplemental commissioner's discretionary fund, and we used that money to help the clubs that had been hit the hardest by the decline in local media revenue, and we're going to continue with all of those programs this year to the extent we can get another agreement with the MLBPA.
Do you anticipate the next CBA to have to address it in a more significant way?
Look, I don't know that the next CBA is really the way to address the media issue. I think that the way to address the media issue over the long haul is really in our next national negotiations after the 2028 season. And I do think baseball needs to alter its approach in advance of those negotiations. I think we need more central control over all of the rights, whether they're traditionally thought of as national or local. And we should be making an effort to make our product more national, because those national games are worth a lot more than games that are sold only in a local market.
It is encouraging to hear Rob Manfred finally come to the realization that baseball needs to leave the dark ages behind. It's no longer the national pastime. Anybody who is a sports fan knows that football has usurped baseball when it comes to the passion of the country. But that doesn't mean that baseball should be left in the dust. And I do think if they can create a product that is more appealing and more available nationally to all those who want to consume it, you can get back to days when baseball was, again, maybe not on par with football, but certainly in the conversation. I remember, you know, in the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, you know, right up into, you know, even during 2005. I mean, that entire run, you know, with the Red Sox and Yankees rivalry, when those two teams were showing in showdowns and squaring off, it was, you know, it dominated the conversation. And I remember the White Sox beating the Red Sox in 2005 in that playoff run. And just, you know, it hasn't been nearly the same since. And baseball has kind of lost its way, I think. And so I'm at least encouraged to hear Rob Manfred try and articulate how baseball can get back to being, you know, one of the passions of this country like it once was. Finally, Rob Manfred addressed the loss of Bob Uecker. I know Connor McKnight did quite a bit on the Saturday when he passed in January. I know Connor talked about how Bob Uecker really helped foster part of his love of the game for baseball. I think Bob Uecker did that for a lot of people out there. He was a true ambassador. And maybe you're like me and you were introduced to Bob Uecker when you saw Major League for the first time and you were like, who is this guy? And then retroactively you found out that, oh, he actually does call baseball games for the Brewers and he actually played baseball. Rob Manfred talked about losing a true ambassador of the game.
Bob Uecker was a unique treasure for our game. It's rare that you have somebody who kind of crosses out of sport into sort of the general consciousness in the U.S., and Bob was certainly that. Those type of ambassadors are really important to continuing the role of baseball in America's culture and in growing a new fan base. So he was a huge loss for our game, and I know a huge loss, particularly in Milwaukee.
I think we can all agree on that, and I would encourage anybody out there who, after you get done listening to the White Sox and Cubs today, if you want to go ahead and honor the memory of Bob Uecker, throw in Major League. You probably haven't seen it in a while, and go ahead and just rewatch it and focus in on Bob this time around, because I promise you will not be disappointed. White Sox baseball is back. Join us at Rate Field for opening day on March 27th as we take on the Los Angeles Angels at 3:10 p.m. The first 20,000 fans in attendance will receive a 125-year anniversary plush blanket presented by BMO. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. Again, first Cactus League game for the White Sox coming your way as soon as we wrap up here. Len Casper, Darren Jackson on the call as the Cubs visit the Chicago Cubs for their spring training opener right here in your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
That song, little This Week in Baseball theme music. This is the time on White Sox Weekly when I take you around Major League Baseball and catch you up on everything else going on around the league, not just with the White Sox. Of course, we'll sprinkle in some White Sox news as well. Sox fans head to the ballpark on Saturday, March 29th, as the White Sox take on the Angels at 1:10 p.m. The first 15,000 fans in attendance will receive a 1907 replica jersey presented by Rush. Purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. All right. How much is a jersey number worth? That, my friends, is a question that always has a different answer to it. And I suspect part of it always is determined based on how big of a contract the guy who wants the number signed for. And when you're Juan Soto and you just signed a deal for $765 million with the New York Mets, chances are you can figure out a way to grease the wheels and get yourself number 22, which used to be worn by Brett Beatty. Now, Brett Beatty happily gave Juan Soto number 22. And then, sure enough, if you missed it the other day, when Juan Soto arrived at spring training for the Mets, he surprised Brett Beatty with a brand new Chevy Tahoe with all tricked up, everything you can imagine. And it was a pretty cool social media video that the Mets put out. So if you haven't seen it, go check it out. But Brett Beatty comes out of the clubhouse into the parking lot. I'm not sure exactly who told him, hey, go out there. But he goes out, and then sure enough, Juan Soto is there dressed in full regale and is with his donning the number 22. And as Brett Beatty comes out, Juan Soto hands him the keys to his brand-new Chevy Tahoe. And then afterwards, Brett Beatty talked about how exactly Juan Soto knew exactly what his dream car was.
Well, so I've been driving, honestly, Mark's been giving me a hard time about it, but I've been driving the car I drove in high school around for my whole career. And I come into spring training every single year, and I'm like, I'm going to get a new car. And then Mark's always like, me and Edgar talk about it too. Me, Mark, and Edgar are always like, what are you going to get? And I'm always like, probably something spacious, probably like a Tahoe or something like that. So Edgar kind of knew already. And then it was kind of fishy too. Edgar, like, he asked me for my car insurance yesterday. I was like, that's a little strange. So I figured something was coming, but I didn't expect that at all. That was amazing.
Yeah, I think that's the tip off, right? I'm trying to think if anybody at work, Brendan, asked me, hey, I need your car insurance. I'm not sure how many people I would actually hand that over to.
Maybe if you were on a trip and I was like helping book stuff.
Yes, yes. But I guess in a Major League Baseball clubhouse, when someone, maybe that's the tip off. Someone says, hey, let me get your car insurance. Good things are probably coming your way in the near future. I can't imagine any other reason why they would want it. So I found that amusing. Juan Soto buying Brett Beatty a brand new Chevy Tahoe in exchange for number 22. Elsewhere around Major League Baseball, now Vladimir Guerrero is set to become a free agent this winter after failing to reach a long-term deal with the Blue Jays. He had set earlier this week as a deadline to get a deal done. He was unable to arrive at one. And when we're talking about $765 million deals, I'm not saying that Vlad's going to get that number. But based on his age and his production and the fact that he will likely be the biggest and best bat available on the free agent market this upcoming winter, I anticipate he's probably looking at a deal that will be north of $500 million, and I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up getting it. Another player who is familiar with big contracts, Rafael Devers of the Boston Red Sox. Now, he signed an extension a couple of years ago as the best hitter in the Red Sox lineup, the guy who has manned the hot corner basically since his arrival at the big leagues. But you may have heard, when we talked about it last week, Alex Bregman signed a pretty big deal himself, although not quite as big as Devers, to play for the Red Sox this year. Now, Alex Bregman has won a gold glove at third base, but quickly there were some rumors that came out after Bregman's signing that he'd be open to potentially playing second base if needed or anywhere the Red Sox wanted. And so that led the Boston Red Sox beat reporters to ask Rafael Devers about if he'd be willing to shift off of third base.
So are you saying if they ask you to DH, you won't do it?
No.
Can you expand on that?
I play third.
No, and he plays third. Now, Bregman has since said that, he'll play anywhere they want him to. But I do think I wouldn't be surprised if, as the season progresses, we do eventually see Devers playing maybe a little bit of first base, the occasional DH, and maybe to try and keep him happy, they'll play him at third base two or three times a week. But I think for the best of the team, you probably want the gold glove caliber third baseman manning that position more often than not. I could be wrong. But we'll see how that shakes out as the season extends. Mets owner Steve Cohen said earlier this week that he's been blowing through his budget because he, quote, wants a winning team. So we'll see how long he continues to spend and purchase players like Juan Soto. On the other side of town in New York, the Yankees extended Aaron Boone to a 2-year contract extension. And we just saw this yesterday. I guess the Yankees are changing their long-standing facial hair policy, which has been something they've been criticized for, I'm telling you, as long as I can remember. Basically, since I really started locking in on what was going on around baseball in the early 90s, this has been a topic of conversation, facial hair on New York Yankees. Don Mattingly the famous Yankee first baseman, got into a couple of issues with George Steinbrenner, the posthumous owner of the Yankees, who instituted the policy when he bought the team, I believe, in the mid-70s. And it had been an ongoing policy that had been just in place forever. And now I guess we got word yesterday that the Yankees are going to lift that policy. Brennan, you were telling me that there's still a caveat, though. Right?
Well-groomed facial hair is allowed.
Well-groomed. All right. So well-groomed facial hair is now going to be allowed for Yankees players. Wonder if that had anything to do with Aaron Boone's contract extension. Probably not, but interesting enough. A couple more quick notes before we wrap things up here. Giancarlo Stanton is uncertain for opening day. He hasn't swung a bat in 3 to 4 weeks. And other than that, the Arizona Diamondbacks signed Geraldo Perdomo to a $45 million deal this past week. All right, when we come back, we will give you some sad news. Hopefully it is not going to be any worse, but some sad news we learned earlier last week that I will share with you for a White Sox fans, which had me thinking about one of my favorite personal moments experienced at Wright Field that I'm sure a lot of White Sox fans will remember fondly. We'll do that next right here on White Sox Week.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
They're two strikes away from a win here in 2005 in Game 1 with Jenks on the mound and Everett at the plate. Game 1 to the White Sox.
That is one of my all-time favorite moments that I was in attendance for when Bobby Jenks closed out Game 1 of the 2005 World Series at what was then U.S. Cellular Field. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller here on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000. White Sox and Cubs coming your way as soon as we wrap things up here on White Sox Weekly with the White Sox first Cactus League game of the season as they visit the Cubs at Sloan Park today. Of course, Bobby Jenks, the reason I play that highlight, though, received some unfortunate news courtesy of Scott Merkin, who we actually talked to last Saturday on White Sox Weekly. But apparently, Bobby Jenks is battling stage 4 stomach cancer. According to Scott Merkin, Bobby Jenks actually is in Portugal right now. The family moved there to be closer to Bobby Jenks' wife's family. And then he talked about dealing with how he's been battling stomach cancer over the last 5 months. So just terrible news. And I know White Sox fans, he's one of those personalities on that 2005 season that really embodied just how fun they were, and having him come in and close out games and just, touch 100 and strike out the side more times than not. Remember, in that season, he retired 41 consecutive batters, tying the Major League Baseball record. So one of those things where terrible news. I wanted to mention that for all Sox fans, because I know everybody who is a Sox fan loved Bobby Jenks. And so here is hoping for the best, sending prayers to Bobby Jenks. Hopefully he can tackle this terrible disease just like he was able to close out so many games for the White Sox during his career. Sad note to end on, but I did want to mention it because I felt it was very important to recognize the battle that Bobby Jenks is going through. Hoping for the best, sending prayers his way, and to all the members of the Jenks family. That's going to do it for us here on White Sox Weekly. White Sox and Cubs coming up next. Len Casper, Darren Jackson on the call. Thanks to our executive producer of White Sox Baseball, Brendan Riley, for producing today's show. We'll talk to you next week right here on ESPN 1000.